Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Are you ready for your gray matter massage?
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Paul Revere's lantern lighter here, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties, communist coup update, Muslim coup update. My friends, I have been asked to offer the invocation, the opening prayer, for the Tea Party barbecue July 3rd in Orchid at Pioneer Park. I have accepted that invitation, and I hope to see you there. I noticed, however, that our Tea Party here is sponsored by the GOP, the Grand Old Party of Lincoln. Now the party of Meg Whitman, pro-choice candidate for governor in the state of California. Who believes that? If we're going to be pro-choice, then we need to make sure women have the money they need to pay for their right to an abortion. So with Meg, we have not only pro-choice, but beyond that, we've got this idea that the woman has a right to an abortion, kind of like, the right to free speech, I guess. And then beyond that, she demands that we provide public funding for it. In other words, your tax dollars funding abortions. That's your GOP candidate for governor. As for the Senate seat, that is up for grabs this November. The GOP has sent up Carly Fiorina, and this is particularly galling since Chuck DeVore, a known conservative with solid credentials on every conservative issue, including that little side issue regarding the protection of the baby in the womb of its mother. Well, he was available and in that race. And as for Sarah Palin, I had a hard time reaching that knife that she plunged into the middle of my back. Kind of hard to get to there, Sarah. Sarah Palin proves, alas, that she's the empty skirt so many libs said she was. Huh? Well, what else can I think? I'm disgusted, there's no question about it. I'm about as mad as Lincoln was over the repeal of the Missouri Compromise. Remember that one? That was about that little issue of slavery. An issue he was particularly concerned about, one he wouldn't compromise on. It's sort of a one-issue guy, huh? Some would say. I guess some issues are so important they cannot be subordinated to things like, money or political power. But I guess that depends on what god you serve. I mean, if you're a belly-serving mammon worshiper, what would you choose if you had to choose between a baby in the womb and a candidate who can win, huh? Yeah, that stupid commercial. If I have to hear that asinine commercial again, I think I'm going to retch. What if you had to choose between a giraffe and a kangaroo? What if you had to choose between breathing clean air and drinking clean water? What environmentalist wacko put that one together, huh? Okay, all right, let me make my point. Listen, let's play hypothetical choices, all right? A new game produced by EnviroLibs. Choose between murdering a baby in the womb or a career as a nude model for Playboy. Here's a really tough one. Choose between murdering babies in the womb or beating seals to death with clubs. I know that one will take a while. You got to think about it, huh? Here's a good one. What if you had to choose between cutting a baby to pieces with a scalpel and bringing it partially out of the womb, stabbing it in the back of the head, and sucking its brains out? Now, there's a choice for you. How about this one? What if you had to choose between scorching a baby with burning saline solution until it dies or protecting the eggs of a hawksbill turtle? This is especially tough, when you, quote, feel sorry for the eggs, end quote, as one lib said. I mean, these are tough questions indeed, and it makes the game so exciting because, if you think about it, turtle eggs, human eggs? I mean, hey, tough choices, huh? What if you had to choose between a giraffe and a baby in the womb? Hey, Sarah Palin, what would you choose if you had a choice between a candidate who is on record for caving in to compromise when the choices get tough and one who is on record for never compromising on core values issues? What would you choose? I mean, hypothetically speaking. What would you choose if you had to choose between a candidate who has who was 100% straight on all issues of concern to conservatives, all the issues you claim you're concerned about, You know, hey, let's throw in the Christian thingy, you know, that thing about values coming from core beliefs rooted in your Christian convictions. Throw that one in there. What do you do when you have to choose between a candidate who waffles on life issues, whose record on life issues looks something like a snail trail, and another fella whose record on life issues looks like a straight plowed furrow? That one wasn't hypothetical, was it? Oh, that was a real life choice. And Sarah, you chose poorly. You know why? Sarah's a party gal. Oh yeah, party gal Sarah. She goes with the party, man. She goes with the choice of her party. Problem is, she chose the wrong party. Not the tea party, but the political party. Maybe it's about skirts versus shirts, because she did support Sharon Engel in Nevada, who we all hope will take out Harry Reid. What is her angle, har-har? Actually, you know, Sharon Engel seems like a straight arrow. She's right on life. Well, that's a good thing. I like her position on Social Security and cutting the budget. Sounds like she read the Constitution or something, you know, and came across that little thing called the 10th Amendment. I mean, she has this idea in her head, you know, that what Arizona did was a good thing. Meg Whitman, on the other hand, well, she's so brilliant. She thinks the Arizona enforcement of immigration laws is racial profiling. Enforcement of immigration laws, mind you, that have been on the books in Arizona for many, many years, and, by the way, that virtually mirror our own federal laws on the subject. So the feds won't secure the borders, and Arizona decides that they will. All right, Meg Whitman thinks, well, this is social profiling. That's your GOP for you, friends. No soul, no commitment to anything that matters in the long run. Meg Whitman will not stand up to the liberal establishment here in this state any better than Arnold did. Anyone who can compromise their natural motherly instincts, indeed the natural instinct of humanity, to preserve the life of a baby in the womb, well, such a person can compromise on anything if it serves some political or personal interest. In this environment, anyone calling themselves a God-fearing patriot ought to see that, you know what we have in front of us? The greatest opportunity we've ever had to promote conservative values. This is not a time to retreat on them. This is a time to put candidates out there that would, for once, put the waffling middle-of-the-road types on the spot to pick a candidate who's good for the economy, but whose personal values are a threat to the baby murderers in the state, not the other way around, not a threat to the babies. Aren't you tired of this? Look, the libs use situations like this to seize power to advance their hidden liberal social agendas. They say, hey, people are so angry at Bush, you know what? We can probably sneak in a real communist. And they did, didn't they? But what do gutless conservatives do? Watch, this is amazing. They look at a situation like this when people are up in arms and angry and ready to vote the bums out. And you know what they say? They say, oh, now's our chance to get power. Let's compromise on our most important values in order to get the power back into our hands. What a bunch of dolts. Where's the leadership? Now, forget it. Of course, you and I know they're not that stupid. Evil lurks in every party, and even in the Tea Party there are shadows, by the way. There will always be those with evil hearts boring their way into the soul of any movement. It takes strong, committed leadership to keep any movement on track. And I'm afraid when it comes to strong, ideologically committed leadership, the Dems have it on their side. The GOP is infected with wet noodle leadership. Try to stand one of them up. You know, when it's dry, it seems to stand up okay. Just let them get wet with a little saliva dripping on them. You know, because the wind vane seems to have turned in their favor, and then they go limp like a wet noodle. I don't know. Maybe Palin is all about skirts versus shirts. Because it seems clear to me she's not about conservatism. She had a perfect choice in Chuck DeVore, but she went with Carly. Why? Well, because she can win? Interesting. What, because she's a gal? What, because she was the GOP pick? Because, my friend, it certainly was not because she was the best representative of our conservative principles in that race. I have resisted the development of a third party for reasons I've explained many times. To hear some people talk, however, you would think that the two-party system is like some kind of constitutional thing or something or other. I heard some bobblehead say, you know, we have a two-party system in America. What are you talking about? The Republican and Democratic parties are not defined in the Constitution. America isn't a two-party system. Don't let them feed you that nonsense. Madison did not construct a two-party system. We have, what about five different parties now? Don't let them make you think that it's all about Republicans and Democrats. You know, like they're the only, like they're the divinely appointed parties. Baloney. Well, anyway, I'm telling you folks, the GOP is sick. S-I-C-K, sick. If GOP leadership in California cannot see that this is a perfect time to put forward our best representatives of conservative values, then they are a hopeless pack of wet noodle politicians. Are you a party gal, Sarah? Is that what you've become after all the hopes you've stirred in our hearts? Are you, after all, nothing but a stinking politician? A soulless creature who, when it comes to choice, to a choice between leading your party to stay true to our important and cherished values, you drift away from that course heading, and follow instead of lead? Bless God, where are the leaders? All right, I'll be right back. You call me. Yell at me if you want to, it's all right. But what I want to know is this. If you have a choice between protecting a baby in the womb and protecting your political career, what do you choose? I'll be right back.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If you find yourself suddenly feeling like someone turned on a bright light inside your head, and this is followed by a sense of euphoria, described by some as a feeling that you have just been enveloped into the warm and comforting embrace of the truth, then you are a lights on listener. However, if you experience sudden bursts of rage, uncontrolled trembling of the lower lip, sweaty palms, and mental disorientation, then you are definitely a lights-off listener. Now that you know what symptoms to look for, call 888-770-8000 and leave your message. Is it lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. The pastor is ready to receive your message. Your brain massage will continue in a moment. Freely you have received, freely give. We don't charge for the brain massage show, but that doesn't mean we don't have to pay to air them on the radio. Many have asked if they can help. Thank you. If you'd like to join them, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Any amount is welcome.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur and spokesperson for God. Paul Revere's lantern lighter here, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, a communist Muslim coup update. Good night, we are in a mess, so how about a little humor to, well, relieve the pressure? I got this from a Marine pastor friend of mine, so keep that in mind. It begins, quote, please forgive me, end quote. One wonders for what? And then he writes, quote, number one, you cannot stick your tongue out and look up at the same time, end quote. Okay, now that's weird. Quote, number one, you cannot stick your tongue out and look up at the same time. Number two, all idiots, after reading number one, will try it. Okay. Number three, and discover that number one is a lie. Number four, you're smiling now because you are an idiot. Number five, you soon will pull this on one of your friends because idiots hate to be alone. I kind of rephrase that a little bit. Number six, there is still a stupid smile on your face, end quote. Well, then my Marine pastor friend writes, quote, I apologize about this, but I'm an idiot and I needed company anyway. He goes on to say, you now have two options, delete it or send it along to put a smile on someone else's face today. But my friends, if you thought that you got the punchline to this joke from my Marine pastor friend, well, you haven't got it yet. Here's the punchline. It could be worse, he says. You could be one of those who think there are 58 states. Obama, anyone? Or that the island Guam could capsize because there are too many Marines being deployed there. Or you might be so dumb you don't understand how it can be that after all the information that has finally got out about Obamacare, the American people still don't like it. And then he concludes, so you're really not an idiot after all. All right. Very, very well done. Appreciate that. That's Pastor Margerson, by the way. Okay, gotta weigh in on the McChrystal debacle. Sometimes these things are so convoluted, if you're depending on what you hear and read in the media, you'll just be swinging back and forth and not really know what's going on. Here's the deal. I read the entire article from the Rolling Stone site, and the actual article, I mean, you know, one that's created all the brouhaha. I read the entire article, my friends, all 8,000 words. Somebody call and say thank you. Out of the 8,000 words of this article, guess what I found? That McChrystal actually said they got him in trouble, got him fired. Are you ready? About six or seven words. Here it is, about 755 words into the article. Let's see here. Okay. Mention of McChrystal's comment about a month that he made about a month earlier, saying that Biden's ideas about how to conduct the war in Afghanistan were, quote, short-sighted, according to McChrystal, and would likely result in, as McChrystal coined a cute little phrase, chaosistan. And that president alleged, according to this article, slapped him down for that in a private meeting with the general. So all of this is related in the article, and the general can't express a contrary opinion about the ideas given by the vice president. So, okay, I get that. His job is to carry out orders, not to discuss them, not to discuss his differences with leadership in public. Oh, I get it. And so he got reprimanded. Now, let's see here. He was not fired for that, though, was he? No, he wasn't fired for that. Let's see. What was he fired for? Okay, here it is. In the interview with Michael Hastings of the Rolling Stone, McChrystal is flipping through his speech cards, preparing for a speech he's to give at an event in Paris, France. And he's pondering, half to himself, what Biden question he might get today. You know, he's musing out loud. And he muses aloud, quote, "I never know what's going to pop out until I'm up there. That's the problem," end quote. Now, here, the reporter from Roll Your Own, that's Rolling Stone. Anyway, the reporter offers his own observation, and he says, quote, "Then, unable to help themselves, he and his staff imagined the general dismissing the vice president with a good one-liner," end quote. That was interjected by the reporter. And then here, he quotes McChrystal making a joke out of this situation and mocking a question he might receive from the press at this event, saying, quote, "Are you asking about Vice President Biden?" End quote. And then McChrystal laughs and then says, quote, "Who's that?" End quote. Ooh, that's tough. Wow, boy. And then, okay, a top advisor who happened also to be here chimes in and he says, quote, "Biden," end quote. "Did you say bite me?" Well, that's it. Folks, that's all. That's all, folks. I searched in vain through the next 7,200 words for anything else the general said. Let's look at this. Now, I'm not saying that it was right for him to say that, but I just put this in context. McChrystal has been called on the carpet because he made a public statement regarding his disapproval of Joe Biden's ideas for military operations in Afghanistan. With that as the background to this, you can understand that McChrystal has very little respect for Biden's military strategies, okay? That's probably not the first general who's ever had feelings like that. And he's probably a bit sore, perhaps, from the rebuff he got over this disagreement with Biden. So anyway, he's preparing for a speech he's going to give in Paris, and he's musing, "I wonder what sort of Biden question I'm going to get," because, you know, he's been probably beat on that over and over and over, right? Oh, it has been made a big deal. So he anticipates, privately, only there's a reporter there from Roll Your Own magazine, claiming about 1.5 million subscribers, I think. But McChrystal is not in the mode of, you know, glare public eye mentality, right? He's chumming with his aides and fellow top advisors with this reporter who happens to have been with them now for several hours. My point is, it's a relaxed scene, okay? And McChrystal is looking over his cue cards for a speech he's going to give, and he's musing out loud with some sarcastic humor, really, about what Biden question he's going to get today. You know, I totally get this. So he cracks a joke. I mean, you know, he's in Paris after all, right? Everybody's laid back and chilling. Anyway, he envisions being asked a question about the Biden blunder. So he mocks as if some reporters asked a question, and then he responds, "Are you asking about Vice President Biden?" And follows up with, "Well, who's that?" Now, one of his top advisors is there. He immediately jumps into the spirit of the whole thing, and he quips, "Biden, did you say bite me?" This is all har-har, cutesy-cutesy, right? And then this twerp of a reporter makes a thing out of it, prints it in this article, because it demonstrates that there is tension between the general and his civilian political counterparts. And so this reporter, understandably, I get that point, but he's got to make some kind of an issue out of it. And it's really more in the way that the reporter presented it that created more of the problem. The real question here, however, is why, when McChrystal got a preview of the article, did he not recognize that he had been had, that this part of the article was going to be read as a public dissing of the VP by a high-ranking commander under the commander-in-chief, when it really wasn't given as part of an interview? It was just said as a casual thing when the guy happened to be there. Anyway, is he that dull? I mean, it brings up all sorts of questions. Did McChrystal decide he had had enough with this war being directed by total buffoons? While he has gotten most of what he's asked for thus far, I understand also that he is a flaming liberal himself. He voted for the O, and he supports this coin doctrine, conceived, by the way, by Petraeus. The idea that, you know, this coin doctrine, maybe you don't understand what that's about, but this is the concept that in order to fulfill our objectives in Afghanistan, we recognize the unique nature of the situation, and we need to embed into the culture or the society of the Afghani people and work, you know, the military more like a police force within the community rather than as a military occupying force that's pursuing an enemy. It's a very controversial approach, by the way, and what it means is still being debated, and it's causing some confusion regarding rules of engagement. It's created some problems, but anyway, we're not going to go there at present. The point is, McChrystal is totally with the president in this thing, and he was dutifully implementing this coin doctrine. He supported it, so far as I can find. Or in other words, McChrystal was not being frustrated by the civilian command beyond what all military personnel feel when they're dealing with people who don't really understand their world and their situation. I cannot find anything that causes me to think McChrystal was angry at Obama or that he had any desire to humiliate him publicly. Maybe he has political ambitions of his own. He certainly played politics as he advanced up the career ladder in the military. Maybe that's what this is about. But if so, he's kind of working contrary to his own interest, wouldn't he? I mean, he's liberal himself. He would be alienating himself from the people he would look to for support. Doesn't make sense, does it? Unless the guy's totally faking the liberal nonsense in order to curry favor with his liberal commanders and get the promotions and so on. But I understand he's been liberally inclined even when there were, there was at least one conservative-leaning fella in there when he was anyway. Well, we'll see. But I think the real story here is that Obama has nowhere else to turn, at least not if he wants someone in the position that has any credibility with the soldiers or the military. He would appoint one of his labor union buddies to the position if he thought he could get away with it. What do you want to bet? Oh, my soul. Anyway, Petraeus. Obama called him a liar, didn't he? Oh, no, that's right. No, it was hilarity when she said his testimony required, quote, the willing suspension of disbelief, end quote. Remember that? But I thought Obama called him a liar, too. No. You say that was Harry Reid. Oh, yeah, I remember that, too. Quote, he has made a number of statements over the years that have not proven to be factual, end quote. So we certainly have Hillary and Harry calling him a liar. We have that on record. But I can't really find any place where Obama brought up any question to his credibility. However, I did see the video of Senator Obama interrogating the good general during his confirmation hearings, and, you know, you've really got to see this for yourself, but essentially, what Obama was asking from the general was a plan for failure. I'm not kidding. I mean, he wandered all over the place like he does, making a political speech out of this, actually, using the hearing to blast Bush policies and all that, and promote himself among the liberals. His favorite pastime, by the way, Bush bashing and Bush blaming, in his senatorial tone and condescending manner. It was vintage Obama non-speak blab, blab, blab. You have got to listen to it closely. But if you listen to it as the one who would need to respond or answer him, then you'll understand why I'm saying he just wandered about, didn't really formulate a clear question, not one at least that made any sense. But anyway, if you pay attention when you watch this, you will notice that what Obama wanted to know is Petraeus's plan for defeat in Iraq. That's what he wanted to see. You see, listen, Petraeus did not stipulate under what circumstances he would give up, admit defeat, and withdraw. We wouldn't expect that, would we? But that's what Obama was looking for. That's what he was trying to pull out of the general. You know, a general of the caliber of Petraeus is not going to plan to lose. Defeat isn't an option of these guys. But that is what Senator Obama wanted from the general back then. Go back, listen to that, and pay attention, and you'll see that's exactly what he was asking for. He wanted to give al-Qaeda a clear mission statement out of the mouth of our own general. He wanted our general to instruct al-Qaeda what they needed to do to win. He wanted to communicate to his Muslim Brotherhood what they needed to do in order to defeat America. He wanted Petraeus to document, to state emphatically, exactly, sir, under what conditions he would admit defeat and turn tail and run out of Iraq. All right, well, you voted for him to be your president. Your president doesn't really want to win the war in Afghanistan. He didn't want to win the war in Iraq. He doesn't want to clean up the oil spill. You know, I'm not sure why we call it an oil spill. It's a leak, isn't it? But anyway, Napolitano has solved this for us, and she has commanded that it's no longer to be called an oil spill. It's to be called, what did she say? She's commanded that it should no longer be called the Gulf oil spill. That's it, because the word Gulf, it's too close to the word golf, and it's being called the Gulf oil spill as a way of ridiculing the president for playing so much golf during the Gulf disaster. So, you know, hey, very cute, huh? I mean, these people are such phonies. Anyway, he does not want to win the war in Afghanistan. He did not want to win the war in Iraq. He does not want to clean up the oil leak. He wants to drive prices up for his oil sheik buddies in Saudi Arabia and keep us dependent upon Arab oil. You know, he bows to the king of Saud. He does not want to win the war in Afghanistan, my friends. He wants to keep America pouring money into the pockets of his corrupt Muslim buds over there. Oh, yeah, that's what's going on, my friends. You see, here's where it gets interesting. From some information I've received, McChrystal, it seems, was beginning to see that pouring all this money into Afghanistan was creating a whole system of corruption there, where the money was being diverted into the pockets of some of the bad guys, some of the insurgents, some of the Taliban. And, well, generally, it's creating a pocket of corruption in Afghanistan. And he was beginning to make noises opposing that business. The switch to Petraeus might delay the inevitable, but I'm convinced that Petraeus is going to go for a win in that war in Afghanistan, and in short order. Well, who knows? Maybe Senator Obama did not want to win in Iraq and Afghanistan, but perhaps President Obama has a different agenda, huh? But whatever it is, the only thing he has done so far that has caused me to pause and consider that there just might be, possibly, some limit to his determination to advance the Muslim cause, which he has recently said in an interview he has sympathy for. Huh. Well, maybe he does not have everything in place yet. Perhaps God is having mercy on us. Because I do believe Petraeus is a genuine patriot and that he will do what is necessary to protect our country from an Islamic invasion. Okay, I've got to go. Tell me what you think about the show today. It's actually a pretty good deal for you, my friend. I work my tail off to research all this deep and true, and I provide documentation for every assertion I make and for each fact I assert that might need documentation. My own opinions, of course, are my own opinions, but I offer documentation to support them. I need callers from each broadcast area to give me some feedback so I have some idea of how I'm being received. Here's what you do. You call our listener response hotline. That's 1-888-770-8000. It's toll free. It means a lot to me, and it's very encouraging. It's a great blessing to have you check in. And just say lights on or lights off if that's the case. That number again is 1-888-770-8000, and leave your message for me. I've lit the lights in the church belfry arch. The signal the enemy's on the march. You call in and let me know you see the lights are on. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
Freely you have received, freely give. We don't charge for the Brain Massage Show, but that doesn't mean we don't have to pay to air them on the radio. Many have asked if they can help. Thank you. If you'd like to join them, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Any amount is welcome. For a complete brain massage experience, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is waiting to massage your brain.